Today, I'm welcoming onto Radio Gorgeous the MD of Barefoot Coaching, one of the most successful and fastest growing coaching businesses in the UK. She has recently been awarded Coach of the Year. She has over 25 years experience in training and development of coaches. She's co-written a book called The Coach's Casebook, Mastering the 12 Traits That Trap Us. And she is Kim Morgan. Hi, Kim. Welcome onto Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, Josephine. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So today we're going to focus on a few traits that trap us, and we'll be covering perfectionism, imposter syndrome, people pleasing and performance anxiety. So Kim, how do you read your clients? How do you find out their traits without being too invasive?
Oh, I think that's a really good question. You know what, Josephine, I think they just show up actually. I think they're usually the issues that people present with. So people pleasing, you can tell instantly.
Because they're saying sorry all the time.
Exactly, they're saying sorry all the time. They, as clients, they think they haven't done enough, and they're apologising. Am I interesting enough to be a client? Perfectionists, as coaching clients, will want more and more homework and think that they haven't done it well enough, and they'll come back with their homework completed like good girls. People with imposter syndrome will often be highly successful women who present for coaching saying, actually, I think I'm going to be found out. So can I give you a live example at the moment of a client I've had recently? A very successful lawyer whose organisation paid for her to have coaching with me because she kept going to the senior partners and pointing out her mistakes to them. Absolutely true. Just saying to them, I think.
What sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, they were minute mistakes. And in fact, the partner said, this is normal. No one gets it all right all the time. But she was such a perfectionist and had such imposter syndrome at the same time. It's a deadly combination that she just felt the need to show people her vulnerability to an extreme extent.
Gosh. We're doing perfectionism, performance anxiety, and
Performance anxiety. Again, that's really self-professed, I think. I meet a lot of people, men and women, who are terrified of public speaking. And the higher up you go in organisations or even in self-employment, the more you need to be able to speak in front of a group of people. So that just shows itself in the ways that we probably recognise, just avoiding it, avoiding speaking in front of people, but when you do, experiencing real kind of stress responses.
Gosh. So, Kim, I found it very interesting that you said in the book, notice how you feel after you've been with a person.
Yeah.
So tell me, you know, so say you've met me today, you've only met me for 5 minutes, you feel my energy? What sort of energy is it?
Yeah, then? Totally. So the reason that I said that is because sometimes we, and I'm saying we,
especially women,
particularly about women today, have a tendency to think that if somebody says something negative to them, or if somebody is quiet and withdrawn, or if somebody ignores them, we tend to look inwardly and think, what have I done? How, you know, it must be something about me. And my view is, after years of experience, people are how they are. You know, people will give you what they give others. So start to think, you know, was that me or was that them? And how did they make me feel? Because it's likely that if they made me feel small, they go around the world making other people feel small too.
So if you meet, like when I first met my partner, he's a very, he's very dynamic. I think he's the excess character in the book. But he was like, he's always fast, always on the move. And he used to make, my stomach would be like stressful near him.
Yes.
And so that's it. So that's how you can judge, like afterwards, oh gosh, I'm feeling stressed, or I'm feeling drained. Or so you can, so it's a really good barometer for all relationships.
It really is. I've got another story if there's time for another story. Yeah. So I had a really interesting experience once. I had a partner like that once. He was really dynamic and he really kind of pushed everybody, which is a great trait or quality.
In business.
but overdone at home, it can be a bit much.
Yeah, it can.
And I am a very much a people pleaser as well. So one day the two of us went to see somebody who worked with horses and he did leadership coaching with horses. And so we both went there. We're in a field in our wellies and it was my turn first to try to control the horse. So I was just given a horse and a rope and invite the horse to walk around in a circle. Within minutes, the horse was pushing me around. Within minutes, I was literally tied in knots and the horse had got his way completely. So, so the coach...
You wouldn't be a very good cowgirl then.
Certainly wouldn't.
You'd be lassoed by the horse.
Pulled along behind it by the rope. So the coach said, Is this what happens in your life? And I was like, maybe not. And then I thought, is this just a bit of a con, actually? Is this, you know, does everyone get pushed around by the horse? Well, then my partner had a go. And the horse actually did what he wanted for a time and then ran away from it. Actually ran away because I think he felt too pressurized, too coerced to do more and more. And the coach said, you know, animals actually will pick up that feeling about you and they'll pick up the way that you interact with them and they'll know how they can kind of push you around. So absolutely fascinating.
Did you run away from this husband in the end?
Yes. Yes, I did. But that's not a message to you in any way at all.
No. Luckily, my husband's calmed down, so it's all good news.
And you asked me a question about, you know, what did I pick up about you? I picked up about you someone who is very passionate, enthusiastic about life in general, somebody who wants to put people at their ease, someone who likes fun. And having a good time and someone who appreciates beautiful things.
Yeah, and I've also got that, you know, the girl that's the rebel in the... Yeah, I've also got that independent... What
Roxy, her name was. Yes.
There was an independent character in the book and I thought, yeah, that's me. I was expelled from school. I was expelled from beauty school. I was, you know, every job I've been sacked from, you know, I can't fit in. That's one of my things.
Yes,
you know.
I've got a lot of that too. I wrote that Fierce Independence one a little, it was a little bit autobiographical actually.
Fabulous. Yeah. Yes. Oh, we'll get on then.
Won't we?
The most interesting thing also is that the traits you said can be positive as well, these traits. So you think all the time, oh God, I'm a people pleaser, but you said that there are positive aspects. So let's talk about people pleasing first. How can that be a positive thing? Is it the thing of making someone feel at ease, I suppose?
Absolutely, completely. So I think of all of them on a sort of spectrum of underdone to overdone, really. And it's just when they tip out of balance that they become problematic. But of course, people pleasing, we probably both have huge elements of that in us, and it's what enables us to get on well with people, communicate. It's just when it's overdone and you begin to suffer as a result of it, when you are doing everything for everyone else and actually not able to ask for anything back.
Could you tell us an example of a client?
Certainly. I can tell you another real life example, slightly different, but somebody who actually got into difficulty at work because they couldn't say no, and they particularly couldn't say no to salespeople. So they
well, I know how strong they are.
Yeah. So they ended up spending hundreds of thousands of pounds of the company's money on equipment that they didn't need merely because they couldn't say no. So I guess, you know, there's kind of light side of it, which is we get taken advantage of by our friends. We end up babysitting for people and kind of resenting it and
working at the church fair, doing anything that's like voluntary.
Yes. Or come round and see our holiday photos. That would be lovely. But there's also a very serious professional derailing side of it, where I work with organisations and I see that it's exactly these traits, not people's skill sets, but it's these things that cause them professional difficulty. So we kind of have a laugh and go, oh, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, a bit of a people pleaser, but there's kind of dark side to them as well.
Yeah, especially when you're working in a corporation, because that's where you've got to be. They're so political and they're all about relationships. That's the thing if you work in a big company.
Yeah.
Everything is about a how you react to another person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I mean, obviously it's good, it's life skills, but I imagine in a business you could, you could self-sabotage yourself, couldn't you, so easily?
Yeah, and that's why I'm not here to, you know, to sell coaching, but I passionately believe in it, because I think coaching on those areas is the thing that will make the difference to us and our performance. Just telling people how to do something is not coaching, but identifying the things that get in our way and trip us up, like these things, can really change your life, actually.
Exactly. How can people pleasing be negative on a family? Because I've got someone in mind who is sort of such a helicopter parent, but I think it's not good for the family.
So I think that's interesting. Mm. I think that's an interesting discussion, people pleasing and helicopter parenting.
Because she doesn't seem to let her children breathe.
No, and it's really important.
Do you think it is that control or is that people pleasing?
It's hard to know. Mm. It could be some of each, and it's a kind of bit of an expectation now, isn't it? It's happening more and more, I think. What came to mind when you asked the question was being the people pleaser in the family, who everyone goes to and who has to listen to everyone else speaking about their problems and try to solve them and actually never have time for themselves.
Isn't that a lot of women?
Yeah, it is. Mm.
But also women feel guilty about time for themselves.
Yeah, they do.
I've got a friend that's a facial masseur, and she said people come around and they say, oh my God, I don't know why I'm doing this. This is really bad. I shouldn't be spending the money and I shouldn't be wasting time on myself.
Yeah, totally. It's absolutely, it's everywhere. And I always, I always invite women. It's easy to say and hard to do, but be as generous, kind and compassionate towards yourself as you would to your friends. So, if I see you today, I would go, oh, you look beautiful. Everything about you looks really lovely. And I would just see the beauty in you. But if I looked exactly the same as you today, I'd probably look in the mirror and find all sorts of things wrong. So we show such generosity towards others, which is wonderful. But it's about turning that round and showing it to ourselves too.
Wonderful. Now, what's the fine line between kind of self-love and selfishness then, seeing as we're going on to that?
Good question. No. So, again, my immediate response to that was that most women I coach are so far from selfishness that, and if I have coaching clients who often say something like that, oh, but I don't want to become a nasty person, I don't want to become selfish. And I tend to say to them, look, you are so far away from it. If you get there, I'll tell you. But it's highly unlikely that you will. So I think that question in itself is almost
only a kind person would answer.
Yeah. And it's almost a smoke screen that we have and part of our defence to not focus on ourselves.
Now, how would I know as a perfectionist what would be showing up in my life?
Okay, so you would have unrelentingly high standards for yourself that would absolutely kind of cripple you. So you wouldn't be able to leave the house without the house being perfect, or you maybe would have it shows in different ways. So for some people it's the home and it's order. For other people it might be their own personal appearance. For others it would be high standards of achievement, so lots of qualifications, passing exams. For others, it would be being a perfect parent. But in an area or more than one area of your life, you would beat yourself up really badly if you were not achieving the exacting standards which you were setting for yourself.
Sorry, our cat's just arrived. A Radio Gorgeous cat, we've just got to stroke it.
Yeah.
So if you've got this and you know you've got it, how can you break the spell? What could be the first thing we could do to make ourselves break up from this?
Yeah, perfectionism is a tough one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is, because it usually comes from childhood, doesn't it all? And it usually comes from being praised for doing rather than praised for being. So, you know, praised for your achievements, sort of conditional love rather than unconditional love, which has usually been given with the best of intentions. You know, as parents, we're never going to get it all right. But
So if you're saying to your child all the time, you've done really well, oh my gosh, you've done brilliantly, fantastic. So that they might think, the only way I can do then is keep being brilliant.
Exactly. That's what they've been praised for.
Because I always thought praising my children, because my son does have a slight perfectionist tendencies, and I thought praising was because I was never praised once. So I thought
Josephine, I didn't want to come here and give you something to beat yourself up about. The point is, we never get it right as parents.
I've had enough therapy to know.
Exactly. But I think this has to be an extreme message that we get as children. But we internalise those messages that we get as children, and we go on and beat ourselves with the same stick.
So if you knew someone that was obsessed by housewife, obsessed by looks, obsessed by her work, what the first thing, as I say, would you say something to just kind of make them relax more?
Okay, so I would do a few things. The first thing I would do would be just to invite them to drop their standards by maybe 10%. And it will be hard to change behaviours. It always is, but actually get them not to just think about it, but to do it. So I might set some challenges, like go out onto the high street without your makeup on one Saturday morning and just see what happens. Because actually, guess what? Nothing happens, does it? And nobody notices. Complete a task without double and triple checking it and just send it off and see that it goes okay. So it's really about trying on for size some new behaviours and coming to the realisation that actually the world didn't fall apart just because of that. And then looking at the benefits of doing that to yourself, and the costs too, because I think some of the costs of perfectionism, and a lot of people have looked into this, are high.
What, nervous breakdowns,
burnout,
divorce?
Real stress. Mm. In the end, a kind of, you know, a lack of joy. Mm. Because if you never think you're good enough, if you've never reached the standards that you've set yourself, you'll never appreciate what you've achieved. And before you know it, you're at the end of your life and, you know, you haven't stopped and enjoyed the moments. Right. So it's actually quite a destructive trait to have.
And it can be male, female, anyone.
Yeah, it can.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, now we've done people pleasing. Now let's talk about performance anxiety, because I think a lot of women may suffer from this. Can you describe it? What is it?
So typically, I will notice it, and I run quite a lot of women's development programs. And on those women's development programs, there's always a few times when we ask women to stand up and present back some findings, and I notice that the majority of them are really quick to say, I can't do that. I can't stand up in front of a room full of people and speak. And for some, it's close to a phobia. And for others, it just makes them extremely, extremely uncomfortable. But it's connected with perfectionism. It's connected with people pleasing and lack of confidence. It's a sort of social anxiety, fear of being watched, fear of making a mistake.
I think it's fear of making a mistake. You are literally, everybody is looking at you.
Yeah.
I mean, Before I was a radio presenter, I, because I am quite show off, would find it hard to get up and talk, you know, and my hands would be clammy and I'd be thinking about it all the time, and I wouldn't remember what I've done. I'd done it so quickly, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now I find, since my job is literally, you know, with a microphone, I can talk to anybody now with no problem.
Yeah.
But I can imagine just a normal person, you know, having to stand up there would literally, I can understand why. In fact, isn't it the most people say it's one of the most scary things ever that they could ever
do? It is. There's a great book called And Death Came Third. And the title refers to the top 10 fears that people have. And public speaking was first and death was third. I mean, that's just impossible to even comprehend. But
okay, so imagine I've got to do, you're just meeting me now, I've got to do a talk tomorrow. I'm so worried. I'm not going to sleep tonight. I'm going to dry up. I'm going to cry. I'm going to make a fool of myself. What would the first few tips to give me?
Okay, honest answer is, if you were feeling like that and you were going to do a talk tomorrow, it would be difficult to get you there overnight. Because I think this is one trait that needs time, and it needs a kind of gradual approach. So when I'm working with people with performance anxiety, I will begin with them, even with me in my office, just standing up and saying something.
That's a really good idea.
Then get to the point where they maybe invite a couple of really good friends who they trust to listen to them, and then expand it bit by bit, because as you said, it's absolutely right, Josephine. Even you couldn't do it. Even I couldn't do it either in the beginning. And this is something that we're not exposed to enough.
I think it is a skill, probably more than a you know what I mean? It's not a natural thing to do it. I think it is a skill to be learned.
It is. It is. Yeah. And you only kind of learn it through doing it, unfortunately. Yeah. And that's the kind of paradox of this.
I mean, maybe, sitting down at meetings is quite a good time. You know, when everyone's sitting in a room and everyone has a chance to speak, you could just say, look, that's the same thing. You're just standing up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Try and make them see it differently.
Yeah, standing up and talking. Mm. You know, we can all stand up and talk.
Tell people, because lots of people are nervous coming onto Radio Gorgeous, I say immediately, you know this subject better than anybody else
Absolutely.
In the room.
You're spot on, because I think it's about also unearthing the assumptions that we have about public speaking. And those assumptions are typically things like this. Everyone in the room is going to know more about it than I do. Who am I to kind of be standing up there and talking about this? I have to be as funny as Michael McIntyre or whoever it is that you think is funny. I've got to come up with original material. And so
how precious.
I know. Imagine if that all that is running through your mind. Certainly in my life, and I did start out being really terrified of public speaking. In fact, I got a job when I was quite young, and when they offered me the job, they said, by the way, you know, you have to go around and promote this charity. It was the charity.
Oh my God. And you wouldn't have taken it.
And I said, no, I'm sorry, you don't understand, I simply can't do that. And they said, you have to. So I have real empathy for people who experience that, because I have done. But I think you get to a point where you feel like your authentic self is the right self to bring to that, and there's no one right way of doing it other than the way that's right for you. So I'm very self-disclosing. I talk a lot about my own life, and I know other people who are very academic and formal, and I know other people who are very quiet, and I'm a bit of a show off as well. But everyone has something to offer, as long as you're just being true to you.
Okay, so just get on stage, stand up with the microphone and just be yourself.
Yeah. There's a good organisation that I'd like to sort of shout out to, actually, which is called Toastmasters International, and they're everywhere, all over the UK. They have, they have sort of clubs, and people can go along and just practice with a group of similarly scared people. Mm. They just practice kind of 2 minutes a time talking about a topic, and in the end it just becomes second nature to
them.
And that'd
be really good, so because a lot of women now especially are doing speeches at weddings, and we didn't do that before.
No.
And we're doing more readings in church, you know what I mean? Like, we're taking more the roles that men took.
Yes.
Which is a lot more public speaking.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think schools are probably doing more public,
in the assembly.
Yes, which we didn't, did we? No, it was sort of scary if you ever had to read anything. Yeah.
So sadly, we cannot capture all the character traits in the book, Kim. Which trait do you think I may have left out, which you'd like to zone on in today and is relevant to women particularly?
The one I can think of is coping with loss. And when I say loss, it doesn't mean necessarily conventional bereavement. I'm just aware at the moment from all the work that I'm doing with women that there are lots of life transitions that we go through, from perhaps maternity leave and leaving a job that we love.
Also, having a baby is
becoming a parent.
You're losing all your freedom.
Definitely.
Especially if you're a woman.
Yeah. And if you've had a big career, you're often losing your status and your identity, and you have to redefine it.
Mm. In fact, I found a massive loss the first year of getting married.
Yeah.
Because I'd been so used to being able to go wherever I want. Yeah. You know, the freedom factor was suddenly I had to come back home at night. It's like, what? wasn't used to that.
For yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Then there's also divorce.
There's
isn't
divorce,
there?
Yeah.
And also, as you say, also being made redundant could be another thing.
Yeah. Then there's emptiness syndrome. And
luckily, I haven't got that. I'm always really happy when my children go.
I was the same, actually. I didn't experience that at all.
But it does affect a lot of women. Yeah.
It does. And then there's menopause.
Yeah. Yeah.
And called the change for good reason. Mm-hmm. And then post-menopause, sort of facing retirement, what next? There's often self-employment. More and more women are becoming self-employed. That's another transition.
So loss is literally something that was big in your life. I know it sounds, I'm being literal, but it literally is something that's going and you're going to have to cope with change.
It is. Mm. It's exactly that. I'm not sure that I'm going to remember this phrase exactly, but it's a definition of grief, which I like, which is grief is the sort of set of conflicting feelings and emotions that accompany a change in your life or a change in your circumstances or a change that means that life isn't going to be how you expected it to be.
Mm.
I've said that a bit clumsily. Mm. It isn't exactly that, but hopefully you get the gist. So we go through those things all the time throughout our lives. And what we tend to do, I've noticed, is we kind of like, you know, pull ourselves up and carry on and march forward. And I just think it's worth sometimes stopping and acknowledging that there is a set of emotions going on and there has been a big change.
So can you tell us the emotions one should or might go through?
I mean, they can be many. So they can be sadness. They're often associated with a kind of loss of identity, like I don't know who I am anymore, or I feel like I've lost a part of myself. And I think in order to navigate that successfully, you need to look back over what's gone before and appreciate the good things, and also look at it with eyes wide open and go, it wasn't all perfect either. So stop either idealizing or demonizing the past situation, because there's good and bad in everything. And then, and only when you've done that, really, and you've kind of closed that chapter, can you start to work on, well, okay, what's the next stage of my life bring? And I say that because a lot of my coaching clients come for coaching to look at the next steps without having properly let go of what's happened before.
Whatever emotions might you feel?
Fear, I think. Sadness. Shame, guilt, you know, especially if, like, even in divorce, I know that absolutely we shouldn't feel shame in this day and age.
It's still that thing about the failure tag, you know.
Isn't it? It's still there. I come from a very sort of very married family. They're all very married. And so I've had a number of relationships since I got divorced, and I still tend to get treated a bit like Shah Kapoor and appearing at family events, you know.
You're the different one. You're the rebel.
Exactly. So there's that whole mix of possible emotions.
And having to go into your family and be with them and think, do they like me? You know, all those things. Do they like me? Do they approve of me?
And probably also touches, you know, deep-seated conditioning that we've had ourselves in our lives. You know, do I approve of me, actually, too? So I think as a, you know, as a society, as a nation even, it's a very good thing to focus forward and focus on the positives. I like that.
And that's what all the self-help books tell you to do, isn't it?
Yeah, they do. But I don't think you can do that without also nodding to, okay, this is what I've given up. This is what's changed. This is what I've lost. And I think that's a kind of healthy...
Feel all the feelings surrounding it.
Yeah.
If you deny them and then go on to the next stage, just all sorts of...
You're so right.
Kind of explosive things could happen, or depression could happen.
You're so right. Mm. Because actually, Josephine, you said, what feelings might you have? Which was absolutely the right question. We have feelings in response to loss. And how we try to navigate that or cope with that loss is through thoughts. We give ourselves a good talking to, don't we? And say, come on, keep busy, and never mind, plenty more fish in the sea, all those kinds of things that we say. But you can't solve feelings with thoughts unless you've properly acknowledged those feelings.
So maybe go through a few days of crying and feeling sorry for yourself. You know, feel sorry for yourself. Wallow in it. Yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, and have a good old look at it. So
eat a box of chocolates, get a glass of wine, watch your favourite film, and just think, I'm going to spoil myself today, and I'm going to feel a bit miserable at times. I'm going to have the odd cry, and you know, but I'm going to think, life is good, you know, at the same time.
And it's part of everything we've been talking about here. It's caring for yourself and going, it's okay to have negative feelings. I don't have to be positive all the time. I'm entitled to feel like this.
Yeah, because that is one of the trouble with these self-help groups, self-help books, groups, everything. It's all this thing about you've got to be positive.
Yeah.
What if you do look in the mirror one day and think, oh, God, I hate me, I hate everything, I hate the world, I hate, you know, I'm miserable, you know.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. It's absolutely the sort of flip side of it. And people I know who have experienced serious illness have even been made to feel worse about themselves because some other people have suggested that they ought to be able to think themselves better. You know, it's kind of gone a bit crazy. So we really need to understand that positive thinking and moving forward is wonderful and useful, but you need to be on a very sort of secure platform to be able to start doing that work.
And that means facing your feelings, accepting yourself, and sometimes just having a good old cry.
And some wine and chocolate. So I particularly like that bit, yes.
Okay, fantastic. So The Coach's Casebook by Jeff Watts and Kim Morgan is published by Inspect and Adapt Limited. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me, Josephine. It's been wonderful.
Oh, that's so great. You'll find even more dynamic, amazing, feeling women on radiogorgeous.com.